Bienvenue à une nouvelle série d'épisodes spéciaux sur les entrevues qu'on a effectuées au CQSI 2018. L'entrevue est réalisée par moi, Patrick. Et le concept va être qu'on va commenter chacune des entrevues avec Nicolas. Et on fait ça sur la terrasse à Québec, donc petite ambiance en plus. Et dernier épisode de notre série sur les entrevues du CQSI 2018. Notre prochaine entrevue est avec Ted Trush de RSC. Et il va nous parler de The State of Cybercrime and Fraud. Are you prepared?
So I'm with Ted Trush from RSA on the Fraud and Risk Intelligence. They just gave a presentation at CQSI on the state of cybercrime and fraud. Are you prepared? So Ted, what kind of behavior or specific attacks and things like this that companies should be aware of considering fraud, and what's the state of all this in Canada right now?
So obviously, the different attacks and different, let's say, cybercrime fraud attacks are changing all the time. Mm-hmm. So some of the things, obviously, customers should be aware of that as things change, they need to adapt and evolve to these changes. So blockchain hosted, it's a way for fraudsters to sustain their business. In the past, a lot of the fraud was done on the dark web. When Hansa and Alpha Bay went down, this moves fraudsters to other platforms. So right. How can they sustain their website? They're running a business just like we're running a business. They want to be up and running all the time. So they look to blockchain hosting. There's no central authority to prevent access to them. So that helps them out. Moving to social media is a huge platform for fraudsters now. I mean, Facebook is probably the top channel in when it comes to fraud. And you can do a simple search on Facebook for CVV2 and find all kinds of stolen credit cards for sale, right? So the other thing is IoT. So many people are buying and becoming more aware of different IoT devices in their homes. Mm-hmm. So smartwatches, fridges, thermostats, doorbells, that kind of thing. And the continued use of the same username passwords or default passwords give fraudsters the ability to use these devices as a platform for DDoS attacks or hosting phishing sites. And again, with the massive breaches that we're seeing daily of personal information, the more personal information is out there, the fraudster can now direct a more targeted spear phishing attack, which looks very legitimate. And the more access they have to that, the higher chance that they're going to have an account takeover and financial gain. So all of these things, which are really changing and moving towards the fraudster's ability to use new technologies to do that.
And what will be the first thing a company should be aware of or just put in place to think about this, be aware of fraud? And
it really depends on the type of company and what business they're in. So we do a lot of work with financial companies, so the top banks in Canada. So obviously they're concerned with fraud when it comes to online banking. One large sector would be email transfer fraud. So they have to be aware of who's coming into their site. Is it a legitimate user, or is it someone coming in with stolen credentials? And we do a lot of risk-based authentication and user behavior analytics to determine whether or not that user is legitimate, mm-hmm. or whether it's someone impersonating a legitimate user and it's a fraudster. So it really depends on the type of business they're in and what they're doing. As we also protect card issuers. So if you're issuing MasterCard, Visa, American Express, we protect the issuers as well as we protect the end user. So when it comes to buying something online, if you're buying something, let's say, from BestBuy.ca or something like that, we're looking at that user and that card. Is that card stolen? What device is the user using? Have we seen that device before? That type of thing. And we can provide the issuer with a risk score and say, this actually looks very risky. We would suggest that you challenge that user and don't trust them, right?
So would that kind of behavior be merged into what a SOC is, or others the fraud were?
Typically, it's more in the fraud department. So we allow our customers to base their policy and their security policy around fraud and determine how much risk they're comfortable with. Okay. So we'll provide them with a risk score that maybe is from 0 and 1,000. If it's a high risk score, say 900, typically that's something like you just want to decline that transaction completely.
Yeah.
If it's a low risk score like 200, and let's say the amount is a little like $20, then you can say, it doesn't matter, we're going to allow that person to go through. So we'll provide that risk score, but it's really up to the customer to decide, what am I going to do with that risk score? Am I going to challenge them? Am I going to just let it go through? Am I going to decline them?
Okay. Right. That makes sense. Thanks a lot.
Cool. Yeah, you're welcome.
Awesome.
No problem.
Thanks.
Non. Quand on parle de fraude, en fait, c'est un des éléments qu'on parle jamais en termes de sécurité en entreprise, gouvernement, très peu, en fait. La seule place qu'on en a, ouais, pas entendu parler, mais qu'on sait qu'il y en a, c'est les banques, puis c'est un peu ça qui présente le... Il dit que leur logiciel est principalement vendu au niveau des banques pour détecter la fraude. Le concept que tu utilises ta carte de crédit au Canada, puis 10 minutes plus tard, il y a un achat dans tel autre pays, puis là, il y a une détection de fraude et autres. Ça, c'est quand même connu, mais tout le concept de dire « je vends un service en ligne et autres » qui a des cas, pas d'attaque, mais d'utilisation frauduleuse, est vraiment très, très peu discuté. C'est une des choses qui fait que beaucoup d'entreprises perdent de l'argent puis ils le savent même pas. Puis, malheureusement, il n'y a pas eu énormément de détails reliés à ça, soit dans l'entrevue ou autre, mais je pense que c'est le point à retenir, là. Qu'on parle de fraude.
C'est un domaine que je connais très peu, fait que je peux pas me prononcer, puis je mettrai pas d'opinion dans lequel ça a aucun sens. Fait que moi, c'est à cette limite-là.
Yes. Donc, ça termine notre entrevue avec Ted Drush. Notre prochaine entrevue est avec Stephen Woodward, qui nous parle de Cloud Security Alliance Canada, Perspective and International Direction in 2018.
So I'm with Stephen Woodward from Cloud Perspective. Just gave a presentation at CQSI about Cloud Security Alliance Canada perspective on the international direction in 2018. So just first question, just want to know where we are in terms of security in the cloud in Canada, your perspective in this, where we situated, and then we'll move on the risk perspective a bit.
Great, thanks. So short answer is that Canada's lagging from the standpoint of any sort of a cloud security initiative.
Yep.
And even including things like, not even necessarily cloud, but just even things like general data protection regulation,
right.
Which is a hot topic everywhere else, but I seldom hear it actually in Canada.
Okay.
So, but right now in terms of, there are some initiatives moving forward federally.
Okay.
So ITSG 33, which is actually from the Canadian Security Establishment. So it's their control set. So right. They've updated it as kind of a good list of compliance controls that are applicable in Canada.
Okay.
It's largely based on NIST 853 from the US. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, the control sets have been around for years. It's a matter of just adjusting them and tweaking them. You don't have to build them from ground zero.
Right. Okay. And what's your perspective on the fact that most cloud, popular cloud that exists are mostly US, but there's not much happening in Canada? I mean, there are small companies trying to do it, but they're not there at all. Is there any impact on this? Is there initiative that you see coming up in Canada to go against this?
Things are changing fast,
yeah.
Is the short answer. So Amazon Web Services now has a data center in Montreal.
Yep.
Microsoft now has a data center in Montreal. Salesforce has a data center somewhere in Canada.
Yep.
I know. So the reality is that they actually have data centers and capabilities here.
Mm-hmm.
However, that doesn't mean that you don't have to perform due diligence. So you still need to be aware that if there are U.S. disclosure orders from the U.S. Department of Justice,
right.
They still might have to give data.
Yeah, even with the latest Trump directive saying they can access everything everywhere, right?
Right, right. Yeah, you never know right now with him.
Definitely. So except those big players, is there some smaller Canadian one that appears?
There's actually European ones that are here.
Okay.
Again, Montreal. And one of the ones that I know well is actually CloudOps out of Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been hosting now for five, six years based on OpenStack solutions.
Right.
And then you do have a few out in Kelowna. There's a couple of players out in Kelowna, and then you've got a couple of players that are actually based on Bell Canada.
Okay.
Came out of Bell. And, of course, then you've got all the telcos have, quote, some capability, but it's not necessarily nearly robust or resilient as
it's more just the data center than anything else, right?
Yeah.
So for the last question, what's your vision on cloud security? Where are we at? And do you think companies should move to the cloud considering the security? Is it good or not? Or
so the reality is most companies are actually more secure in the cloud than not in the cloud.
And that's my perspective, too.
Yeah. Because the investments that are being made by the large players are so large. Well, you're not going to make a $1 billion investment on your security for your own enterprise. That said, they are large targets, right? And quite often, when you actually do the pricing, you need to really perform due diligence because you might be locking yourself into something that's going to be expensive.
Yeah, mostly like if you want to switch cloud provider or something in the end, that's where the cost came up.
Correct. Or you might actually be forced to because if somebody gets bought out.
Right.
So let's say Huawei, right? When one of the Chinese, you know, players decides to buy a major cloud provider, which is entirely possible. Then you might decide that you want to make the shift. Right. Well, you need to understand what's the full cost of actually performing all the exit aspects and making sure that you can get your data and your metadata out. Because sometimes they actually have clauses saying that they actually own the metadata.
Yeah.
So we'll give you the data, but not the metadata. So
that makes sense.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks for your time.
Great. Thanks.
Essentiellement, ce qui nous a été entretenu, c'est l'état de l'info nuagique au sens où on confie nos données à un tiers parti. Puis c'est important de savoir que ce tiers parti-là est finalement fiduciaire à notre information, donc il doit la traiter de façon très, très sensible et nous permettre aussi, à certains égards, de nous permettre de sortir de lui au même titre qu'on peut sortir nos affaires de n'importe quelle place ailleurs. Donc, cette organisation canadienne qui, dans le fond, est un peu un groupe de défense des intérêts des gens qui utilisent le nuage, l'info nuagique au Canada, fait valoir le fait qu'on doit avoir un certain degré d'autonomie face à ce genre de choses-là. Dans une perspective d'entreprise, dans ce cas-ci, parce qu'on est en tant qu'utilisateur corporatif, mais si on regarde ce qui est en train de se passer au niveau européen avec le RGPD qui est en train de se... Bien, qui va être d'ici le 25 mai. Je ne sais pas à quel moment cette entrevue spécifique va diffuser, mais au niveau du 25 mai, le RGPD va avoir un effet européen. Et certaines compagnies américaines, d'autres canadiennes, sont en train d'appliquer de façon uniforme les règles du RGPD. Le plus gros exemple en ce sens-là, c'est Apple, où on redéfinit toutes ces règles de protection de l'information qui est dans le nuage, hein, par ailleurs. Et à appliquer de façon mondiale les règles du RGPD. Fait que ça vient de rehausser le niveau commun pour tout le monde à ce niveau de protection uniforme et niveau d'autonomie. Puis le RGPD couvre entre autres le droit à l'oubli, la capacité de télécharger l'information, donc la capacité de transférer nos informations d'un fournisseur cloud à un autre fournisseur cloud. C'est sûr que tant que citoyen, on regarde ça au niveau de Facebook, mais en tant que compagnie, c'est des capacités de transférer nos informations qu'on a hébergées chez un fournisseur. Puis, disons, l'exemple que je vois dans mon entourage plus couramment, disons qu'on héberge chez Azure un certain nombre de degrés de nos informations dans un système de messagerie ou un système de gestion documentaire, d'être capable de prendre ces informations-là et les transférer dans un autre. Pour nommer un équivalent, c'est donc Amazon, de transférer de Azure à Amazon ou d'Amazon à Azure de façon au gré de nos besoins et ainsi de suite.
Excellent. Merci, Nicolas. Et ça conclut notre entrevue avec Stephen Woodward. Donc, cela conclut notre série d'épisodes spéciaux concernant les entrevues du CQSI 2018. En espérant que vous ayez apprécié. Merci, Nick, d'avoir participé. Et on se retrouve dans nos prochains épisodes hebdomadaires ou spéciaux. Merci, bye.